This is Fresh Air. My guest, Paul Schrader, wrote the screenplays for several provocative, well-known films like Taxi Driver, Raging Bull, and The Last Temptation of Christ. And he directed some provocative, lesser-known films like Blue Collar, Hardcore, Mishima, and Patty Hearst. Schrader's latest movie, The Comfort of Strangers, is now out on video. It's based on a novel by Ian McEwan. The screenplay was written by Harold Pinter. The story is about a British couple on vacation in Venice who fall under the spell of an older, charming yet sinister couple. The younger couple is seduced by the older couple's sadomasochistic fantasies. The younger couple is played by Natasha Richardson and Rupert Everett. The older couple is played by Christopher Walken and Helen Mirren. Schrader told me what interested him in The Comfort of Strangers.
Not so much the story as the characters, you know, and the morality. You know, it is not, you know, as they say in Hollywood, it's not story-driven. It is character-driven. And it is just saturated with the moral and sexual ambiguity of behavior. And any of the characters can be read in a number of ways. And I love that. I love that in life, and I love that in art.
Christopher Walken and Helen Mirren play an older couple, and he's the son of an Italian diplomat living in an elegant house. And you could tell right away there's something very unsavory about him, and you could tell right away that there's something very sadistic about him. And although the younger couple doesn't much like him, it kind of ignites this attraction to each other, and they end up making love for days. Do you think that it's dangerous to flirt with danger?
I like that slip of the tongue, making up love.
Is that what I said?
You asked if I thought it was dangerous
to flirt with danger.
Well, yes, but it's fun.
Now you worked with a script by Harold Pinter. How would you characterize his screenwriting?
Well, to characterize his screenwriting, you have to back up to his playwriting in general, you know. And the innovation that Harold brought to the theater 30 years ago was this notion that indirection in dialogue is just another form of direction, and that if a character doesn't talk about a thing long enough, he ends up talking about it. Or, to use another metaphor, you can look at a rock long enough and you will see the bugs underneath. You don't actually have to pick it up. So he often writes dialogue that seems to be meandering, seems to be repetitive, seems to be almost an incantation. But it is very much to a point, and the point is language itself as a mask.
Now, what does that leave you to do as the director? Are there things that you have to put in visually that are not in the script because of the kind of elliptical writing that he does?
Yeah, well, first of all, he has no descriptions in the script. You know, it's, you know,
it's just the dialogue.
Interior room, and then you go to the dialogue. So everything that is on screen has to be imagined. And then you have to decide how aggressive a player the camera is in the drama. If you have a scene with two people talking, there's always three people in the scene because there's the two people who are talking and then there's the third person who's watching them. And how active or passive that person is who is watching them is a directorial decision. Most films like to pretend that the third person is not present, so they hide the presence of the camera. In this case, I decided to go the other way and make the audience always aware of the drifting, voyeuristic, sometimes bored mind of the camera, of the voyeur watching the drama. And I felt that the story was so, shall we say, kind of perverse or morbid, and the humor was so kind of dark that I had to mask it in glamour. You know, it's like if someone gives you a particularly rotten apple and you have to go sell it. You know, well, you shine it up and really cosmeticize it. And hopefully someone buys it and thinks it's so beautiful until they bite into it. and find their mouth full of worms and maggots. And I guess that's how I decided to treat the story and the language and to lend a kind of dreamlike floating glamour to it.
We know at the beginning of the movie, I was really wondering what you were doing because it seems so unlike you. The beginning of the movie is, you know, a beautiful sunset, gorgeous scenes of Venice. And it's almost, European in the sense, you know, the kind of European film that has like beautiful, elegant images and it's kind of boring. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, I think that if there is something that distinguishes European and American cinema, it's not the beauty of the image, because Americans make extremely beautiful films as well. It's the priority that is set on plot versus character. And I think the Europeans are a little more comfortable letting the drama rest with the character and the theme, so that when the story is not being driven with the impact of a Hollywood film, you do have more time to absorb the beauty of the cinematography, and therefore you think it is more beautiful.
But here's what I think I was getting to, that in the beginning scenes, I was thinking that this is a much more high art interpretation of beauty, you know, elegant sunsets, beautiful architecture, Venice, which kind of signifies European, mm-hmm. As opposed to, with the exception of Mishima, you're usually very kind of American subject matter, and you're much more kind of colloquial approach to it.
Well, it's also, I did a film, American Gigolo, which has all of that you know, arty-farty junk in it, too.
My guest is screenwriter and director Paul Schrader. His latest film, The Comfort of Strangers, has just been released on home video. Schrader also wrote the screenplays for Taxi Driver, Raging Bull, and The Last Temptation of Christ, and he directed American Gigolo, Hardcore, Mishima, and Patty Hearst. More after this short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is screenwriter and director Paul Schrader. The latest film he directed is The Comfort of Strangers, which is now out on video. To give you an idea of how eccentric yet oddly seductive the Christopher Walken character is, here's one of his monologues.
We children were again alone in the house. Nanny was away. My youngest sisters, Alicia and Lisa, came to me in the garden. They say, Robert, come to the kitchen quickly. Ava and Maria have a treat for you. I was suspicious, but I went. I was so innocent. On the kitchen table were two big bottles of lemonade, cream cake, two packets of cooking chocolate, a big box of marshmallows. And Maria said, look, darling, this is all for you. But first, Ava said, you must drink some medicine. This is very rich food, and this medicine will protect your stomach. Help you to enjoy it. I was too greedy to question this. I drank the medicine, only slightly disgusting. Then I ate the chocolate and the marshmallow and the cake and drank a bottle of lemonade. They applauded and said that only a man could drink a second bottle of lemonade. It would be beyond my capabilities. I said, give it to me. And I drank the second bottle. And I finished the chocolate and the marshmallows and the cake. They said, bravo, bravo. Then the kitchen began to spin round me, and I badly needed to go to the lavatory. Suddenly, Ava and Maria held me down and tied my hands together with a long piece of rope behind my back and dragged me into my father's study. They took the key from the inside, slammed the door and locked it. Bye, bye, Robert, they called through the keyhole. Now, you are Big Papa. In his study, I was locked in. My revered, my feared father's study, where he received the Diplomatic Corps of London, the elite of the world, and I puked and pissed and shat all over my father's carpets. Walls. My father found me there. He said, Robert, have you been eating chocolate? Then he nearly killed me. Then he didn't speak to me for 6 months. I've never forgiven my sisters.
Christopher Walken is, as far as I'm concerned, an actor we don't get to see enough of in American films. And tell me what you saw in him when you cast him for this role. I think he's just terrific at embodying a certain kind of menace.
Well, the criterion for casting that role was the character has a 10-minute speech.
Right.
And he gives it in a seated position. And that is simply an acting discipline and ability that very few actors possess. And, you know, Chris is one of those actors. So I would have preferred the actor to be more Italian, you know. Unfortunately, both Pacino and De Niro were working at the time, and those were the only other two actors I could think of. But then I very quickly got to Chris, who was available, because I knew he could do this, and I'd seen him do it on stage. And in fact, all four actors, which is Natasha Richardson, Rupert Everett, and Helen Mirren, all of them have a lot of stage experience, because I needed actors who could read a line in more than one way, who could shade and flavor a line as the conversation progressed, rather than actors who simply give up themselves in the same way every time.
I want to talk with you a little about the subject of violence. Violence as a release, as a form of release or even redemption, is a kind of recurrent image in movies that you've directed and written. And I would use Taxi Driver as an example and The Comfort of Strangers as another. And I'm wondering, I mean, I could ask this more on an abstract level, but I'm wondering on just a physical level, if you were ever the victim of violence or participated in any violence yourself, or if your interest in it is, you know, much more intellectual.
Well,
metaphorical interest.
Yeah, but also psychological. You know, I'm something of a claustrophobe. I'm not nearly as bad as I used to be. But that sense of being trapped, of being caught, and of having to strike out to save your life, you know, sort of permeates my psychology. I haven't really participated in violence, and I don't particularly enjoy going to violent movies. And to be honest, I don't particularly make them. You know, in my entire career, I've killed fewer people than Bruce Willis has in 5 minutes. What I do traffic in is psychological violence, which is, in fact, much more oppressive than cartoon violence. So even though there aren't many bodies and there aren't many gun hits and there isn't much blood, there is a feeling of violence, you know, particularly like the first film I directed, Blue Collar. It just radiates violence and tension, even though it's not a violent movie. So to some degree, I've been unfairly stuck in that violence box, and I think that's wearing off now, though.
But when you do have a violent scene, it really counts for something, and there is this sense of release. You feel like everything's been building to this all along.
Yeah, well, I like that thing in Japanese art, you know, which is it goes in through all the arts, Japan, and singing, and painting, and calligraphy. You know, it's repression, 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 and then all of a sudden, boom, explosion. You know, and that. The rapid shift from holding back to letting go, which is a mark of Japanese art, is one that I share.
Do you think that the repression that you went through as a child, because you came from a very strict fundamentalist upbringing where there was so much that you weren't allowed to do, do you think that that contributed to your interest in that sensibility of repression?
Well, if it walks like a duck and looks like a duck, maybe it is a duck.
All right. What do you think your reputation is now in the movie industry?
That's a nice question. I think I'm or kind of make it his own way filmmaker who is respected and given some slack on the cusp, you know, because that's where I am. I'm sort of on the cusp of the industry. But, you know, if you understand the industry, you also know that people who finance films know better than the public how close the circumference of the economic circle is to the locus, and that the man who made Eraserhead can make Elephant Man 2 years later, you know, so that being on the cusp of the industry doesn't mean being out of the industry.
Do you find that the kind of movie that you want to make changes as you get older, either the subject or the style?
Yes, of course. And, you know, that anger thing goes, you know, the thing of the 20s, you know, I'm going to force my way into this world and I'm going to make them put up with me. And then they do put up with you, and so that calms down. You know, I have two children, a house in the suburbs, and you know, anxiety starts to replace anger. The themes do change.
Paul Schrader, his latest film, The Comfort of Strangers, is now out on video. This is Fresh Air.